All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, June 1st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a sunny 61 degrees and it's supposed to be pleasant here for the next 5 days in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Microbe Wars, Bacteria, Genomes, IARPA, CIA, Amazon, and AI. And we discovered that the Central Intelligence Agency has created a division that was modeled after DARPA called IARPA. And their one big project, and they have many, I was just looking out on their project page, but their one big project was this brain initiative that, of course, is being fostered by the Obama Brain Initiative back from a few years ago. We found out DARPA is doing a lot of their own with brain implants, and we have in the 21st Century Cures Act 399S, it actually talks about neurological surveillance for quote-unquote mental disease on a national level, no less. But we were reading about IARPA yesterday, and there are three different programs within this brain initiative they're working on that are being run by different parties. And the one team has good old Georgie Porgy Church helping them to barcode each neuron to then be able to map what each connection does. We found out that they're also worried about how they're going to find all kinds of storage. It was some huge petabyte number that they were talking about in storage for this project. And we discovered that Jeff Bezos and Amazon, the same Jeff Bezos and Amazon that created a parallel Amazon cloud for the CIA a few years ago, has now stepped up for the CIA's brain initiative project called Microns and offered to provide assistance in major petabytes of storage. So let's read 1 second here. We're going to back up. For anyone who didn't catch yesterday, and I know there's a bunch of you because only 18 people watched it, which really gives me a, I don't know, the boost, not the boost I was looking for. I want you guys to realize this is physically, mentally exhausting on a daily basis while trying to drug a life. Remember, it's the end of the school year coming up here, and we are moving into some rocky waters as far as age. So I'm just going to tell you that I am at my probably maximum level right now of what I can handle in every step of the day. So anyway, for you 18 people who heard the show yesterday, go get a cup of coffee. But for the rest of you who didn't, I'm going to do a little review. So IARPA, I think people looked at the title and said, IARPA? That's not DARPA. Who's that? Well, IARPA is the CIA branch that mimics DARPA, and they are calling it their new innovation arm. CIA's newest directorate consolidates several technology business units into one hub organization focused on deeply embracing innovative approaches and capabilities throughout the agency. Although the Office of the Director of National Intelligence conducts its own research, beginning with the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity, more affectionately known as IARPA, they do not see any conflict or redundancy in the establishment of this division. Now, remember, this division is digging into, with George Church and Amazon, not only how to map the brain and reverse engineer the brain, which is exactly how they described it, all in the name of trying to create better algorithms for AI, but also they're trying to figure out how all the bits and pieces work together and what zippity zaps happen between each neurons, what chemical exchange might occur and how it affects other parts of the gray matter. And they're hoping once they understand how each of these pieces as part of this connectome project go together, they'll be able to reverse engineer a human brain and make it artificial. Of course, Georgie has been into a lot of artificial everything and splicing and dicing, so why not the brain? And of course, they've gotten his Weiss Institute, with him at the helm, involved. As well as a large consortium of other institutions. I was just reading a little snippet from intelligencecommunitynews.com before the show. And they had mentioned a bunch of different teams that are involved. A brand new one, looks like March 15th, 2017, so a few months ago, was announced a new partner called ReadCoor, R-E-A-D-C-O-O-R, is joining the Weiss Institute's IARPA Microns Brain Mapping Consortium. Now wait till you find out who ReadCoor is. Let's pull a thread on this big ugly sweater. ReadCoor Inc. of Cambridge, Mass. It seems like right around Boston there seems to be another pit of vipers and mad scientists with green hair. ReadCoor Inc. of Cambridge, Mass. Announced on March 14th that it has joined the multidisciplinary consortium led by the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering, and it actually said that this time, at Harvard University, to map the brain's neural circuitry with unprecedented resolution and precision. The consortium is made possible through $21 million in a contract from IARPA under the Microns program to discover the brain's learning rules and synaptic quote-unquote circuit design, further enhancing neurally derived machine learning algorithms. We went over all that yesterday, but again, review. Hope you guys are back with your coffee now. ReadCoor will apply something that they call the FISSEQ, which stands for the fluorescent in situ sequencing, and proprietarily spatially sequence to push forward the project's neuronal connectomic goals. That was a mouthful. All right, skip over. It's fine where they talk English. Neuroconnectomics is the science of identifying how neuronal cells are connected. And in addition, microns will integrate how neurons work together in specific brain functions. Like, oh, I don't know, I'm telling the truth. Right? We found all kinds of projects like that, where they'd be able to use a camera shining on your face with AI, watching those micro expressions, maybe your little $30 EEG that DARPA just put an RFP out for every home and every school and, oh, and down every deep, dark, long hallway with screams. You know, don't think that this isn't going to be used for something like that. Why would the intelligence community be forming their own brain project with all the best smarty pants in the business? Remember, Georgie Porgy Church is already working on all kinds of manufacturing biology with DARPA dollars at the Weiss Institute. So now let's add this barcoding neuron project with more taxpayer-funded dollars. But wait, wait, wait. What? Where's George Church in this? Well, wait, George Church is helping IARPA. Yes, yes, he is. But wait, this new group in March that joined named ReadCoor that will be applying fluorescent in situ sequencing is what? Oh, a company that was created by George Church to foster mainstream research usage of, yes, his invention of fluorescent in situ sequencing. Wait a minute. Isn't that called nepotism? So George Church is double dipping. You're not single dipping. He's double dipping on the IARPA project, and he is involved in multiple DARPA projects through the Weiss Institute. And who knows, maybe even in the de-extinction program. and some of this other stuff that he's been working on. Remember, Georgie, and even the longevity medicine, don't forget about that one. Georgie has kind of been the man that has set a lot of these timelines into progress. And he is the man that is facilitating not only academic invention and rollout, but also he has been working with these sprinkle-funded businesses. Remember how I told you, DARPA isn't one big pulsating brain. It's a million little pulsating brains. They give them 5-year projects, right? We found out with a contract, they have to usually bid on it with their solution. But DARPA put out like some half-baked idea. We want to, you know, I don't know, be able to remotely control a soldier with a joystick connected to our minds. And they'll put out this RFP. They'll say, you know, we want it to do this, 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 and this. Who can do it? And then give me a dashboard on my cell phone so I can turn him off if he is not operating within parameters. And there are all of these scientists out there hopping up and down like rabid animals trying to get that dangling carrot because, you know, they're pretty hungry out there. And the big bucks comes from the big boys. And that's where they get to do some fun, crazy stuff. And they are under deadlines and they make things happen. They usually assemble teams from all around, or sometimes from the same university or hospital. Sometimes they'll even get our students involved as graduate assistants to start working on this stuff. And they are using our research academic complex. You know, these guys want to get published, make a name for themselves, make a career. So these people don't realize, maybe they do, maybe they just kind of block it out of their minds as to what exactly they are doing. Maybe it's compartmentalized, so they don't realize what they're doing. But these people are being utilized to create a complete and utter destruction that we have never seen. We are at this cusp of literal elevation to godlike status. We are literally now, it's not just talking about it anymore, they're doing it, trying to recreate synthetic life by mimicking what nature has created in the laboratory so we can program it, flip switches, turn things on and off, zip and unzip, right? We've talked about all that stuff. This has been going on for a few years. Go back through my archives. The one day when we had the, it was that little issue where the archives weren't showing up in the YouTube frame. And so I had to go out to YouTube. So of course I go to my own playlist and I'm scrolling down through to make sure what's there. And then I was kind of reading. We have been literally digging deep into these very technologies for at least 2, maybe 3 years at this point. So we're coming up on another anniversary here, August 19th, which by August, I'm so physically, mentally stomped on, exhausted. I never even am able to do a celebration. I don't think we've ever celebrated, really, beyond me doing a little mem of some old guy with a cake and a noisemaker in his mouth and dirty wallpaper. We've never really even celebrated UCY's anniversary, but that's kind of how I feel on a daily basis. But anyway, you go back through my archives. We really have been following this from the early days of when it was just kind of like a distant nightmare. And now, like, it's really hard for me to believe, like, the stories we were reading yesterday about all the microbial contamination everywhere and all the public places we go. And we didn't even cover the subway one. The New York City subway, they literally found organisms that they could not identify. Now, that's got to make you worry. Because do we have some sort of toxic percolating soup that is going out in public transportation in large international cities? Just like I was warning against, you know, that you want to have some sort of Typhoid Mary. That would be the kind of place to do it, would be in an international city. Of course, any biological terror movie you've ever seen, it's exactly how it happens. It's where you get the best traffic, and that's where crazy people reside. You know, they go try to get the biggest bang for the buck, and it's always in someplace public that's going to get news coverage. But The scary fact of the matter is we are being usurped by these technologies. These technologies, just like our vehicles. Remember back in the old days, my dad used to drag me around. Anything broke in the car, he'd put it up on ramps in the driveway, and he'd be working on it. He'd be changing brake lines or new carburetor, you know, trying to figure out what the issues were. We didn't have too many problems. He did some body work one time for my mom's little clunker. I don't remember what it was called. A Chevelle. He found a Chevelle from, I don't know, it was late 60s, early 70s convertible for my mom. It had a big dent in the front passenger quarter panel right in the wheel well. And so he bumped it all out and did fiberglass and whatever and chicken wire and newspaper underneath. And he made this car look really nice. He got it all painted up. And my mom drove that around for a while. But you know, he used to drag me around and teach me all this stuff, teach me, you know, how to emergency fix a belt, or if you get a hole in your radiator, there's a quick fix for that just to get to like a store or to a repair place. But that was back in the days when you literally could like jerry rig your very simple mechanical machine that you, you know, cruised around on the roads. And I told you guys before, they made us take that aptitude test way, way back, I don't know, third, fourth, fifth grade. And I remember taking that test with my pencil. They had these little gears and pulleys and whatever, and I was just so into it. And I'm like, you know, if we pulled this, what's going to happen at the other end? And when they went around the room, they told everyone, you know, you're a librarian, Susie, and you'll be a chef, Johnny, and all this other stuff. And oh, when they get to Jules, you'll make a good mechanical engineer. And the whole room burst out laughing. Well, we're at that point now where it's beyond like basic, maybe innate mechanical abilities to understand the world around us, because everything has gotten to this micro level of understanding. We've been able to increase our technological capabilities to image, understand, track, and then of course have the big pulsating AI brain and algorithms behind us to help process these immense amounts of data. Once they're in a database, we can splice and dice all different types of reports and put them in a nice pretty dashboard with colors to be able to manage things. That's where I've spent the majority of my professional career the last 25 years, is helping bring those capabilities of dashboarding about and tying to the database. And it was all kinds of data. Before it was just web data and whatever, but now it's everything. Now we literally are a part of this internet of things, of everything. They are taking us down to a neuronal and a cellular level. And don't think they're not trying this, because I could guarantee you somewhere in the back room, you know, if Georgia Porgy Church in the same Weiss facility, it looks like it might be a little different lab, but under the same heading, that he's working on this IARPA connectome project for barcoding neurons in the brain. He's also working on a project for DARPA to do manufacturing of custom life, custom organisms. So if he's already doing custom organisms and he's getting paid by IARPA to develop this technology and integrate it into biological organisms to be able to easily bag tag and track and barcode and database and give it an IP address so you can track it all times, real time, why would he not just repurpose that technology on some of the stuff he's creating for DARPA at a cellular level to be able to barcode the cells of life? And I know that way back when we had read about barcoding genomes. And I don't know who was responsible for that, but I would not be surprised if it wasn't Georgie Porgy Church, and that might be where this technology originated from. Well, anyway, so Georgie is double-dipping. We find out not only is he involved with IARPA through this Connectome project, but his company, ReadCore, that is applying fluorescent in-situ sequencing to neurons and identifying how they are interconnected, will be involved as part of the consortium. FISSEQ was developed in 2014 by Weiss Core faculty member George Church, principal investigator of the consortium, and is the one who subsequently founded ReadCorp to bring FISSEQ into mainstream research usage. Unlike traditional sequencing techniques, FISSEQ provides a method to pinpoint the precise location of specific RNA molecules in intact tissue. ReadCorp's role in the Brain Mapping Consortium will be to apply FISSEQ capabilities to accurately detail the complete set of neuronal cells and their connecting processes in intact brain tissue, which, of course, is difficult and costly to accomplish by any of the current methods. Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory will generate a graphic, quote-unquote, map representing all of these neuronal connections. In an era, and they invoke self-driving cars, in an era of self-driving cars, robotics, clinical decision support, and speech recognition, new approaches to artificial intelligence are needed for these emerging technology demands, says Sean Marcel, CEO of ReadCorp. We are privileged by the opportunity to make a fundamental contribution to the technological framework used to decipher how the brain operates in the drive to create more advanced machine learning systems. Because this is really horrifying. So wait, who is in this grand consortium then? Consortium is usually more than two. Well, actually three. So we got IARPA. That's the CIA's DARPA. We have the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering. We have, what were they called? Something Core. ReadCorp. And that is the company that Georgia Porgy Church spun out of Weiss for barcoding using some sort of sequential fluorescence to tag neurons. We have Amazon. We found out they're going to be helping them come up with the petabytes of storage that will be required. We also have, I'm looking here. There's a whole big paragraph with all these names, and I don't want to read all the names. MIT, Columbia University, they have representatives on the consortium, as well as Carnegie Mellon University. So MIT, Harvard and Weiss, Amazon, Columbia. Wait, wasn't that where Obama went? Wasn't Obama the one who went to Carnegie Mellon and announced how artificial intelligence is going to transform this nation? Well, I think so. So back January 29th of 2016, Weiss Institute awarded IARPA contract to further the BRAIN initiative. The Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard University recently announced a cross-institutional consortium to map neural circuits within the brain to improve understanding of what? Oh, not making AI and reverse engineering the brain. No, this is going to be, they say, to improve understanding of neuropathological disorders. Ding-a-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la- I don't even remember his name. The former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Tommy Insel, who is now working for Google's Verily to diagnose and cure mental disease on a spectrum using just the sound of your voice and doctor's smartphone. The consortium will be conducted under a $21 million contract from IARPA. Researchers will use the Weiss Institute's fluorescent in situ sequencing, more affectionately now known as FISSEC, method to identify neuronal cells that work together to produce specific brain functions. Yeah, like neuropathological disorders, of which you and I will be diagnosed with just 10 minutes of your speech at some point in our not too distant future. The consortium will further the goals of former President Barack Obama's brain initiative to improve understanding of the human mind and establish new treatments like transcranial stimulation, for neuropathological disorders such as Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, autism, and epilepsy. How interesting is that? And then we have the 21st Century Cures Act with the National Neurological Surveillance Center Dashboard, Non-Invasive Surveillance Dashboard, that they will be implementing to be able to monitor neurological diseases. Historically, quote, the mapping of neuronal paths and circuits in the brain has required brain tissue to be sectioned. Ding. So good thing no more splicing and dicing brains. And then visualized by electron microscopy. No more brain vivisections. Thanks to Georgie Forgie Church. Complete neurons and circuits are then reconstructed by aligning the individual electron microscope images. And this process is very costly and inaccurate due to the use of only one color. And that would be gray. Jokes, George Church. In a press release, we are taking an entirely new approach, he says, to neuronal connectomics, which is using immensely colorful barcodes that should overcome this obstacle. And by integrating molecular and physiological information, we are looking to render a high-definition map of neuronal circuits dedicated first to specific sensations and in the future to behaviors. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Remember me talking about behavioral monitoring? Well, now it's going even beyond using AI visuals to watch your facial expressions or your physical gait to tell whether or not you are hiding something. Now it could be just a simple scan, maybe even a ubiquitous EEG of some kind. Because remember, brain patterns are as individualistic as fingerprints. And as they are able to crack all the codes and what each little zippity-zap actually means and translates to, and then set the big pulsating artificial intelligent brain pointed to decode those signals. We got a huge problem, Clyde. It is all going to be digitized on a dashboard. So where do we go from here? So this $100 million Apollo project of the brain is fully rolled out. Multiple different projects, multiple different institutions all running at the same time, all dedicated to cracking the secrets and reconstructing a human brain. Well, listen to this. Just 2 weeks ago, a story comes out. The National Science Foundation, IARPA, and some group, and we'll find out who they are, Semiconductor Research Corporation, more affectionately known as SRC, push into, quote unquote, semiconductor synthetic biology computing. Oh, yes, ding-a-ling-a-ling. I was kind of joking yesterday when at the very end of that story we were reading about IARPA and this reverse engineering the brain, and they were crying about the petabytes of data and how they're going to have to find a partner because they don't know how they're going to store it all. And I kind of laughed and said, oh, look out, they're going to be creating the big pulsating DNA storage unit in an NSA data center near you, or soon to be a CIA data center. Well, check this out. IARPA is actually involved in a project like that. 2 weeks ago, May 18th, 2017, out of a publication titled HPCWire.com, a research into how biological systems might be fashioned into computational technology has a long history with various DNA-based computing approaches explored, but now the National Science Foundation has fired up a brand new program called Semiconductor Synthetic Biology for Information Processing and Storage Technologies. And it just issued a solicitation, which is an RFP, a request for proposal, in which 8 to 10 grants totaling around $4 million a year for 3 years are expected to be awarded. So it sounds like the National Science Foundation has also spun out their own DARPA-esque type group with grants, and they have a 3-year turnaround project versus a 5. The program is a joint effort between the National Science Foundation, the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity, more affectionately known as IARPA, and Semiconductor Research Corporation, or SRC for short, and it has the grand ambitions and was the subject of a Computing Community Consortium blog posted yesterday by Mitra Basu, the program director. Quote, new information technologies can be envisioned that are based on biological principles and that use biomaterial, like DNA, in the fabrication of devices and components, or maybe neurons. And it is anticipated that these informational technologies could enable stored data to be retained for more than 100 years. And we found out that DNA storage could be up to like 1 million years, and then they encase it in glass even more. And storage capacity could be up to 1,000 times greater than those current capabilities. We could also facilitate compact computers that will operate with substantially lower power than today's computers. Like, oh, I don't know, let's take a neuronal cell and then integrate some photosynthetic properties, since we got all the genome sequenced, and make it solar-powered brains in a little device. I don't know, and we just feed it sugar once a week, a little sugar cube, boop. I don't know. I mean, they could literally do stuff like this, and who knows what's happening behind closed-door labs that's being funded by these taxpayer dollars and private institutions. I think the National Science Foundation does get research grants from things such as Rockefeller or Carnegie. I mean, a lot of those do. 5 goals, I don't know, don't quote me on that, but look it up. A lot of those groups, like foundations, do get grants from, you know, the big rich boys as well as taxpayer dollars. 5 goals are specified, and each submission must include elements of at least 3 of these goals. Proposals are due in October of 2017. One of the first goals is advancing basic and fundamental research by exploring new programmable models of computation, communication, and memory based on synthetic biology. Now remember, IARPA is involved. And you know, Georgie Porgy Church is going to apply. And the Weiss Institute. Number 2, enriching the knowledge base and addressing foundational questions at the interface of biology and semiconductors. And isn't he already doing something like this for DARPA in that manufacturing project, manufacturing life to spec? Number 3, promoting the frontier of research in the design of new bio-nano. Now we're talking about live nanotechnology hybrids that test the physical size limit in transient electronics, like literally nanobots in your blood. And they would be based on materials including carbon-based systems, so they won't be rejected. Number 4, designing and fabricating hybrid semiconductor biological microelectronic systems based on living cells for next-generation information processing functionalities. And number 5, integrating, scaling up, and manufacturing technologies. I mean, he's going to be a shoo-in for this, George and the Weiss Institute, involving electronic and synthetic biology characterization instruments with CAD-like software tools. So it's not even going to be like cassette chunks of code now. Now it's going to be just like a CAD program. If you've ever used CAD or any type of design application, you're just drawing out what you want it to be. You know, you're having it look at a library and bing, 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 and you just pull in images and build it. And it takes care of all the calculations. The solicitation notes that semiconductor and information technologies facing many challenges such as CMOS and Moore's law as it approaches its physical limits with no obvious replacement technologies in sight. And several recent breakthroughs in synthetic biology have demonstrated the suitability of biomolecules as carriers of stored digital data for memory application. The SemiSynBio solicitation seeks to explore synergies between synthetic biology and semiconductor technology. Isn't that what DARPA's entire biological technologies office is all about, the BTO? I think so. Today is likely to mark the beginning of a scary new time in the future of humanity. I just added that, but today is likely to mark the beginning of a new technological boom to merge and exploit. Yeah, that's what they're going to do. Make money on us. Bazillions of dollars. The two fields of biology, synthetic biology, and semiconductor technologies for information processing and storage capacity. As described in the solicitation, the program's goal is to, quote, foster exploratory, multidisciplinary, longer-term basic research leading to novel high-payoff dealing solutions for the information technology industry based on recent progress in synthetic biology and the know-how of semiconductor technology. It is also anticipated that research in synthetic biology will benefit by leveraging semiconductor capabilities in design and fabrication of hybrid and complex material systems for extensive applications in biological and information processing techniques. Wow, that was a huge mouthful, but what does this all mean? Well, this means something very frightening, a bit tongue-in-cheek, and certainly not noticed for the first time. It is safe to say that nature has already figured out how to do this at least once at a very high level, perhaps, with human computers conditioned by deep learning and programmed to survive, explore, and continue learning. And I would have to second that opinion. It's very frightening. They literally are looking to create synthetic biologic organisms that potentially one day, or maybe on purpose or accidentally, will subjugate the human species. Well, at least for right now, there is no need to worry about the inevitable robot uprising because they are working. Wired Magazine, and this was July 16, 2015, so maybe we've gotten a lot further than this. In 2015, so 2 years ago almost, robot brains can be controlled. Now, we already found out by a rat brain and by a worm brain. They took brain cells from a worm and brain cells from a rat, put them into Lego robots, and they learned to not bump into walls after a bunch of times. Well, also in 2015, robot brains can be controlled by what? Oh, something that they've been doing a lot of research on, something that Georgie Porgy Church completely re-engineered its genome as part of a project he was working on, and that would be E. coli. Robot brains can be controlled by E. coli. No need to worry about the inevitable robot uprising. We will use bacteria to mollify and control robot brains in the future. That is according to a research paper published in the Scientific Report, which looks at using engineered E. coli, something that Georgie Porgy Church knows a lot about, to command a robot underling. The experiments, so far only using modeling techniques, showed that within a few weeks, the bacteria could lead to a robot that behaved like a, quote, higher order, more complex animal, unquote. This is frightening. What happens when they start evolving and then passing down the smarty pants intelligence that you've imbued into its systems? This work was inspired by the impact we already know that bacteria has on behaviors in the natural world, yeah, and like in our guts. There is an excellent piece from Ed Yong in Discover Magazine describing how the microbiome can have a huge impact on behavior, and we have covered a lot of that. It is a direct connect through that vagus nerve and that enteric nervous system from the gut to the brain. And in one particular case, they've also shown in research what kind of an influence the microbiome can have in the gut of a fruit fly on its libido. The study of the insects showed how changes in their gut bacteria impacted their sexual preferences. Huh. That's interesting. Bacteria in the human gut can also have a huge impact on human brains. Professor of Anatomy and Neuroscience at the University College Cork, John F. Cryon, explained earlier this month for Wired Health. At Virginia Tech, where the study took place, biologists look at using synthetic biology to, quote-unquote, reprogram the biochemical pathways inside of the cell, which are the same pathways that control decision-making at a cellular level. It is the minutiae of how biological beings operate, with every living cell able to communicate and carry out commands. Guys, this is what we're talking about. This is just apocalyptic to an apocalyptic degree. It is the minutiae of how biological beings operate, with every living cell able to communicate and carry out commands, and the team now wants to look at how that decision-making process could not only be engineered, but then transplanted into a robot using something called a microfluid bioreactor. We've talked about bioreactors before. That's something that Georgie Porgy Church was working on for DARPA. The plan is to build small bioreactors where the cells can live and then place them on a robot so that we can have, quote, mobile robots that harbor living colonies of bacteria that then direct the robot's behavior, says Assistant Professor of Biological Systems Engineering Warren Rutter, co-author on the Scientific Reports paper. But wait a minute. Let's take a step back to the slightly less sexy outcome of his study, and that was the mathematical model. This model used the example of a robot that would be fitted with sensors and a tiny microscope, which then could take readings from the bacteria on board. But when the color of the bacteria changed between red and green, we already looked at that, making bacteria change color in your poop. And to give the doctor a heads up that something might be going wrong. So they already have that technology. But the little camera microscope shining on the bacteria, when it changes color, it told the robot how fast to go and where, depending on things like color intensity. That was the first simple approach delivered the expected results. But then the team made a significant tweak. Gotta love those biological synthetic tweaks. When we gave the robot one extra component, and that was an ability to talk back to the living bacteria on board, we saw the cells go from simply toggling between different fuel preferences to approaching a fuel source, pausing, and then moving rapidly towards it. It was reminiscent of something Reuters refers to as the stock pause and strike behavior that we see in higher order, more complex animals. Oh, stock pause and strike. You got to love that at a synthetic biology that was programmed with instructions level. By applying this model to real world robot bacteria unions, Reuter foresees using it across agriculture, looking at the relationship between what? Oh, soil bacteria, diddling, and livestock, as well as on oil spills, with drones dropping oil vacuuming bacteria. Oh, my God. Yes, delivering payloads. And if we better understand how bacteria impacts behaviors, as in fruit flies or maybe mosquitoes, like Wolbachia, we could also develop bacteria-based drugs that combat different illnesses, yes, or reproduction. Again, Wolbachia, mosquitoes, and dream drives. Look that up, Georgie Porgy Church, and Oxitec, and Billy Gates. I don't know if Billy Gates was involved in the Wolbachia. But he was in the gene drive financing. Even more imminently, Reuter wants to see bacteria-driven robots in schools and universities. Of course he does. Teaching the next generation of synthetic biologists about bacteria's massive potential. So, we have AI and bacteria that are on this collision course, it seems. And a lot of these technologies are tied back to a lot of the same people. Georgie Porgy Church, DARPA, seems high ARPA. Google, National Science Foundation, Brain Initiative, White House, Amazon, Bezos, Elon Musk, and SpaceX, sending the MRSA into space. See what happens when it becomes more virulent. We also have Elon Musk involved in artificial intelligence as well. And, you know, a lot of these smarty pants, rich entrepreneurs or scientists tend to go at disruptive technologies at a vertical perspective. You don't always put all your eggs in one basket. You take out of the 10 or 20 that are coming, pick five, and then put all you got into all of them and be one of the leaders of the development of the technology versus one of the followers. Well, Elon Musk is another one of those rich smarty pants. Elon Musk just unveiled breakthrough AI research, and here is what you need to know. And this was right around the same time as that last article of bacterial robots that think like higher order animals, May 16th, 2017, out of futurism.com. If imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, then OpenAI's newest robot system should leave humanity blushing. Not only can it successfully replicate human behaviors, ding, it can do so just after a single demonstration of a task. You remember we read a long time ago about that Baxter robot? Baxter had robot googly eyes, i.e. a camera, and he could watch how to do a task, and then he would practice it all night long. By the morning, he'd be well practiced and ready to go on the assembly line. And in the meantime, when he learned a new task, he would save it to his databanks and upload it to the cloud for all the other Baxter robots to access. Well, looks like Elon Musk is now experimenting with a one-shot imitation learning system. The research company, co-founded and chaired by Elon Musk, used two separate neural networks to develop its one-shot imitation learning system. The first, which was a vision network, analyzes an image from the robot camera to determine the location of an object in reality. And I've talked about that before. When does something have sentience? Sentience, the definition, is to be able to place itself within space in regards to the outer world and realize that it is an individual as opposed to its surroundings. Well, using robot googly eyes, it is able to analyze an image from the robot's camera to determine the location of the objects in reality. And in the OpenAI video example, these objects happen to be blocks of wood on a table. The network is then able to do this despite never having seen the actual table or the blocks before. Instead, the researchers have trained it using hundreds of thousands of simulated images, kind of like Google's neural network looking at cat pictures on YouTube, each featuring various permutations of lighting, textures, and objects. And remember, you know, when Google was doing their deep learning, don't think that they are not also utilizing our input and things that we upload, things that we bag and tag when we put them online, things that we comment on. Every bit of input that we provide to this big pulsating machine that we have been creating for the last, I don't know, probably first hit the commercial realm 1995. So again, 25 years. One generation and a quarter. We are designing this, whether we know it or not, by just interacting with it and making it bigger and smarter. The second artificial intelligence that Musk used was an imitation network that determines the intent of a task that it observes the human demonstrating via a virtual simulation. So not even real. They're doing virtual simulations. Then the robot imitates the task in a real-world setting. Again, this network was trained on a thousand of virtual demonstrations, but none that actually took place in reality. By the time the system was called upon to imitate a simulated demonstration in reality, it could do so after viewing the demonstration only once. Even more remarkably, the system was able to complete the task even if the starting parameters didn't quite match up to the original, which means that it can on the fly make up for permutations that were unexpected, kind of like a human can. It's not just a dumb machine anymore. Unlike Musk's numerous other endeavors, OpenAI is a nonprofit, so let's democratize this all. Robots learning on their own and able to, on the fly, make up for unexpected occurrences during an event, during a process. So to that end, it is already quite successful. In December of 2016, the company launched Universe, which is an open source platform where users could measure and train their AI using games, web browsers, and various software. Essentially, the platform gives AI the ability to replicate how humans use computers, which then allows developers to train their systems to complete any computer-based tasks that humans can do. This week, OpenAI followed that up with Robot School, RoboSchool, an open source software for robot simulation. It features dozens of environments in which users can test their robots, and it is integrated with OpenAI Gym, which is a toolkit that gives developers the ability to give and receive feedback on their work and providing them with an online community to support in the development of their AI. Education is being reinvented from the ground up to meet the needs of this new technology, and as our mechanical counterparts ding-a-ling-a-ling get smarter, these guys say our lives will get easier, safer, and even maybe a little more entertaining. Yeah. As we are being enslaved by the machine. Well, there was a story here, and it appears this is the second or third one that I have found over the last few weeks that I've had up here that has been removed. File not found at this URL any longer. This story was titled DARPA's new project, lifetime learning project, will let AI grow up as a child, but it is no longer found. There's also another story that was on whitehouse.gov. Here it is. Maybe it was this one. Page unavailable. Oh, it's an infographic on the Brain Initiative. That has also now been removed from whitehouse.gov/infographics/brain-initiative. Go there because you'll see it was there at one point. It does have a URL, but it has been removed. All right, guys. Well, today is Thursday, if you can even believe it. And I don't know where we're going to go tomorrow. I'll probably dig into artificial intelligence more. There are some pretty scary stories. Google researchers are teaching their AI to build its own more powerful AI. And what could possibly go wrong? May 19th, 2017, Google has announced another big push into artificial intelligence, unveiling a new approach to machine learning, where neural networks are used to build better neural networks, essentially teaching the AI to teach itself. These artificial neural networks are designed to mimic the way brains learn, and Google says that its new technology called AutoML can develop networks that are more powerful, efficient, and easy to use. The way it works is we take a set of candidate neural nets. Think of these as little baby neural nets, and we actually use a neural net to iterate through them until we arrive at the best possible neural net. The process is called reinforcement learning, where computers can link trial and error with some kind of reward, like a dopamine carrot, just like teaching a dog new tricks. It does take massive amounts of computational power, but don't worry about it, because they're making themselves a whole new data center with twice or 100 times the computing power of the old one. But Google's new hardware is now getting to the stage of where one neural net can start analyzing another. And wow, that sounds very similar to some of the stuff that Elon Musk's little project was talking about doing as well. All right, guys. Well, make sure you stick around. It is Thursday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. And then we have Game On with Ron at 7. This week's Al Anthony at 8. And then live, hopefully, both hours of Anti-Media and then Traffic Report at midnight Eastern. All right, you guys, have an awesome Thursday. And I'll see you.